It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin is home to more than 16,000 soybean growers, according to U.S. Census figures, but growers are increasingly faced with declining crop revenues.
That makes decisions about what and how much to plant a lot harder, and President Trump's tariffs against major buyers of U.S. grain could add to growing uncertainties over soybeans.
The U.S. Soybean Expert Council estimates 238 million bushels of soybeans are shipped to Europe each year, but the European Commission signaled the possibility of bans on products not made to EU standards. That would affect crops that are grown using banned pesticides.
So what does all this mean for the thousands of Wisconsin soybean growers? We turn to Doug Rebout, president of the Wisconsin Soybean Association. At his family farm in Janesville, he grows more than 4,000 acres of corn, soybeans, and wheat. Doug, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, thank you.
And Sean Conley joins us, a UW-Madison professor and the state soybean and small grain specialist. Sean, welcome.
Good morning.
Doug, I want to start with you. As you look at soybean exports and sending Wisconsin soy to points around the globe, how might stricter import policies by the European Union affect the soybean industry here in Wisconsin?
Different things that they're talking about doing, yes, can affect us a great deal because we have our procedures that have been approved here in the United States and have been proven to be healthy and everything, but they don't always coincide with some other countries. So if they start putting stricter restrictions on it and we're not able to export as many soybeans to them, that can greatly affect our prices.
Could Wisconsin soybean farmers stop using certain pesticides so that their products could better meet EU standards?
Well, I mean, the products that we use have been tested and proven, and what we're doing here on our farms are safe. And, you know, we want people to know that. Because what we're doing in our fields, you know, this is our livelihood. We're not going to do anything that's dangerous or anything to anyone. We're running the business, so we want to use, you know, the safest and cheapest products out there possible.
How do you consider your trade partner relations in other parts of the world for Wisconsin soybeans? What are those relationships like?
We have good relations with a lot of countries. You know, we work closely with a lot of organizations, and right here in Wisconsin, we work with DATCAP, and they're out promoting our products. And the countries, you know, all over the world, you know, we've had them come here to Wisconsin and showed them what we're doing. And, you know, they see that we're doing good things. And we built up these relationships with these countries, and, you know, so they're proud to buy our products.
Sean, as you watch shifting federal priorities here, President Trump issuing several executive orders to pause or cancel federal funds, and for farmers, this means awaiting payments to support conservation programs. How is this funding interruption affecting Wisconsin soybean growers?
That impacts Wisconsin farmers, both on the soybean side, but also when we integrate other crops into our cropping systems. We're very lucky to be diverse here in Wisconsin in terms of having our dairy operations, forage operations. And as these research projects are paused or delayed or canceled, it has a direct tie to farmers in terms of driving our research forward and being able to develop more and new innovative practices for farmers to be able to grow their crops more economically sustainable.
What are your thoughts on potential shifts in EU trade policy toward American farmers versus what EU farmers are growing?
I think what we really look at in terms of the trade policy is that, and I would echo what Doug had said earlier, is that we have a very rigorous EPA and regulatory process here in the United States in order to confirm that the products that we use are environmentally and economically sound. And when we have our trade partners are asking for more, we just either need to work with them and to, you know, verify what we're doing is meeting those trade restrictions. Or as Doug eloquently said earlier, You know, farmers are very easy to adapt. Part of the challenge that would fall then upon the farmer is then how to verify that those practices are being done at the farm level. So that's an added cost that would come back to the farm gate that isn't realized in that market sector. So I think that's one of the challenges that where does that cost lie on? And it's probably going to lie on that farmer who, given the economic concerns and the climate and the farm industry now in 2025 and even going into 2026, that's going to be very burdensome for farmers to be able to manage and keep those records and be able to occur or incur that cost to be able to meet those obligations.
And Doug, people going to the grocery store are, you know, concerned and, you know, perhaps bracing for higher prices. When you look at additional costs for the soybean industry, what could that mean for Wisconsin consumers when, you know, buying products off the shelf?
Well, I mean, that's hard to say because, you know, it's not like we're controlling the prices. Mm. You know, we're not going, okay, we have extra costs added to us, so we're going to add that cost onto the soybeans when we sell them. We are reliant on the markets, and that's not directly tied to, you know, grocery store prices and stuff. That's more tied to, you know, international markets mm-hmm. and demand other places. So when people look at, you know, grocery store prices, that's not coming back to the farmers. That's, you know, it's getting split up many different ways. So like I said, those costs are incurred by us, and then we just deal with whatever the market is.
Sean, you've been investigating and researching soybeans for decades to better understand the industry. What are your latest takeaways as far as crop health?
Well, I think one of the things that we've really learned over time is, you know, farmers are really trying and doing their best in order to continuously improve the system. You know, my wife is an engineer, and she always talks about process improvement in an engineering setting. And we see farmers doing the same thing as new technologies are brought into the marketplace, as new conservation practices such as cover crops are brought into the landscape. We're looking at ways for farmers to be able to integrate those practices into their production system that can help them both on the economic bottom line side of things, but also increase the environmental sustainability of their farming practice. You know, most farmers in my farm, we are a century farm, which means we've been on our land for over 100 years. We're very conscientious in being stewards of our land, and it's very important that we continue to, you know, improve our production practices so that we have good quality land to be able to give to, you know, to the next generation of farmers as they come in, either our families or someone in the neighborhood. So I think that's really a point where we work really hard and diligently with my research program.
How willing are farmers to adapt and change their practices, especially when they've done something the same way for season after season?
Yeah, what we've learned is in any type of setting, and this really shows in agriculture, we have those that we call the leaders. There's about a 10% group of farmers that are always looking and trying new technologies. And then we work with them to be able to make sure we can integrate them successfully. And then either between myself or we work in concert with our farmer partners is be able to communicate that at a peer group. And like we've seen everywhere else in the society, it's the peer groups that help make those changes. So we can work with, you know, go out and relay our information, but really having the farmers teach their neighbors and work with their neighbors in a landscape setting, in a watershed setting, through groups, organizations such as the Wisconsin Soybean Association, that really helps drive these practices forward and helps us as a community, you know, raise all ships, if you will.
Yeah, that makes sense. We're talking about Wisconsin's soybean industry and the latest challenges facing growers. Sean Conley there, UW-Madison State Soybean and Small Grain Specialist. And Doug Rebout is with us, farmer and president of the Wisconsin Soybean Association. Doug, you've previously served as president of the Wisconsin Corn Growers Association and served on that board. How will you align this experience with the State Soybean Association? Is there crossover?
Well, I mean, both organizations, you know, are very similar in everything that we're doing. You know, when we're talking to our legislators, we're telling the same stories because soybean growers also grow corn. So a lot of what I learned in being on the Wisconsin Corn Growers Association board, I was able to bring over to the Wisconsin Soybean Association. And I'm hoping, you know, that I've learned stuff and I'm able to add a little bit more just because of what I learned from my previous one.
Yeah, what can soybean growers learn from farmers who grow corn?
Well, like I said, soybean growers are corn growers. You don't, very rarely do you have someone that just grows one crop. So we're all out there doing the same thing, trying to grow those crops as economically as we can and as safe as we can.
Sean, you spoke with dozens of farmers during the annual Wisconsin Corn and Soybean Expo, and you led a panel discussion to give farmers a chance to talk about their challenges and their concerns. What came up?
Yeah, so this is a group that we call, affectionately called Beer and Bull. It's a really good opportunity for farmers to come in, and it's an open mic session that growers can, you know, ask tough questions. And there's a team of my peers and scientists, and we had kind of discussed these issues. And a lot of them came in talking about some of the questions related to cover crops, how we can better manage cover crops in our corn and soybean production systems, dealing with herbicide-resistant weeds, dealing with resistance in general, pesticide, herbicide resistance. It's a challenge for us in the ag commodity sector. And then also just dealing with what we really don't look forward to is 2025, seeing as a pretty severe and negative downturn in the ag economy, and really looking and working with farmers to really go into their books and say, okay, these are proven and true practices that provide a positive return on investment. Maybe 2025 is not a season to try something new. To really kind of make sure that they can kind of hold tight and weather the storm, if you will, because the next 2 years are going to be very difficult and challenging for the farming community, not just here in Wisconsin, but across the nation.
In what way? What specifically will be difficult?
I think there's a few things that are going to be difficult. The largest one is the downturn in the farm pricing in terms of commodity prices, just like in the consumer sector, if you will. Inflation goes up faster than the prices come down. Similar things are happening in the ag sector. We see that the farm input costs are not matching that drop as quickly. So farmers are really going to have to, you know, sharpen that pencil, if you will, and look hard at understanding how they can not just survive, you know, for the next 20, 30 years, but also just survive the next year, and looking at how challenging it will be in order to just make it as a farmer. I think that's one of the big challenges we see, not just in Wisconsin, but across the country.
Doug, what will your approach be on your farm to weather this time?
Well, on our farm, we've gone and, I mean, we have the approach that, you know, we have these cycles. We have really good years. We have years where we're kind of breaking even, and then we have some bad years. And we have had some really good years, and during those years is when we were out spending the money and updating our equipment and updating our facility, our grain handling facility. And so now these next couple of years, when it's looking like it's not going to be, you know, as profitable, we're going to be sent back and we're not going to be, you know, spending that money. So, you know, I've always said that the economy kind of runs off agriculture, because as farmers, you know, if we make a dollar, we're usually spending $1.20, $1.25, $1.50. We don't keep that money and we're putting it out into the local economy. And so, when prices are low, we're not spending money. That's going to affect our local economy.
I want to return to our global outlook here. The abrupt cuts dug to USAID by the Trump administration, it's affected American wheat and soybeans, other commodities grown in the U.S. that were going to be distributed as aid overseas. How does that hit home, or does it hit home here in Wisconsin?
Anything that's being done at the federal level is going to hit home, because everything that's happening, you cut programs that are out there pushing our products, then it does come back to us on our prices. So yes, all these cuts, little bit here, little bit there, but it all does add up.
With the legislative session here at home in Wisconsin underway, what do you hope this session can accomplish for farmers?
We're looking for those incentives. Like tomorrow, we're going to have a day up on the Capitol. The soybean growers and the corn growers and the Wisconsin biofuels, and we're going to be talking about some tax incentives for, biofuels and trying to get production here in the state. So that way, we have a more of a local market for our products. And so that can help the local farmers and the economy because it will be building jobs in the local economies.
Sean, what do you hope that state lawmakers can understand about soybean farmers and other crop growers here in Wisconsin when it comes to Wisconsin agriculture?
One of the things I think we really need to start off on is there's, and I think Doug can correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a large turnover in the legislature this year, and I believe there's a third of individuals are either new to a district or new to politics in Wisconsin. So I think that's the first thing we need to do is educate those that maybe not necessarily have a direct tie to agriculture. Less than 2% of society has that direct tie to agriculture, just to kind of work with those new legislators and say, hey, agriculture is important to Wisconsin. It's the number one economic driver of the state. It helps that local community. It helps the local school boards. It's very important. So just to make sure that when we're going through and working on some of the incentives and programs at the state level for either roads or infrastructure, that farm communities are considered and considered highly to make sure that we can get our crop to the marketplace. And then, as Doug eloquently said earlier, spend that money locally, because that helps, the entire community when farmers are doing well.
Makes the local economy go round.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Doug and Sean, thank you for your insights and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That was Sean Conley, a UW-Madison professor and the state's soybean and small grain specialist, and Doug Rebaut, the 2025-2026 president of the Wisconsin Soybean Association. His family farm in Janesville grows more than 4,000 acres of corn, soybeans, and wheat. We spoke last week about the latest challenges facing soybean farmers in Wisconsin and what impact tariffs could have on their crops.
Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, a new memoir about growing up in Milwaukee in the 90s puts pop culture at the heart of what mattered most in relating to others.
There was bonding over movies, over TV shows. You'd watch them in the family room together.
The new essay collection is called Pure Innocent Fun. That's next on WPR News.